The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Cochran, Judge Conley, Judge Smith, the Honorable Jean M. Cochran presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The next oral case on our calendar today is A21-0892, State of Minnesota by Jan Malcolm, Commissioner of Health versus Iron Waffle Coffee Company, LLC. Today's oral argument is being held by Zoom. The same procedural rules apply to this oral argument as apply to our in-person oral arguments. Each party will have 15 minutes for your primary argument. Appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. The Court of Appeals is recording this oral argument. Just a reminder that no other recordings of the oral argument are permitted except with the express prior permission of the Court of Appeals. The oral argument will be posted to our website later today or tomorrow. To counsel, please identify yourself and the party you represent at the beginning of your argument. And also, just one final thing, there is a clock in the one of the windows in the Zoom view that is the timer for your oral argument. Hopefully you can see that. If there's any issues with that during the oral argument, let me know and we will stop and adjust accordingly. All right, with that, appellant, you can proceed when you're ready. Thank you.
This is Richard Dahl on behalf of the appellant, the Iron Waffle. Good morning, Your Honors, and good morning, counsel. May it please the court. I think what I wanted to start out with in my argument was, obviously you can read the pleadings. And so I wanted the court to understand how my arguments dovetail together. In other words, I believe the statutes and the rules and everything dovetail together with regard to the Emergency Management Act, with regard to the Administrative Procedure Act, and all of the above. And I would note that if you look at Section 1403, MnStat 1403, it says that the statute, the emergency powers in 12.31 to 12.37 don't apply when there's emergency, basically. So that includes everything, rulemaking, and includes all the procedures that they have for doing that. And what I find interesting is if you go back to Chapter 12, the Emergency Management Act, then 12.38 and 12.39 are now pick up where 1403 says 12.31 to 12.37. And then if you look at 12.39, you see in 12.39, that's a statute that says basically you have a right to choose your own medical treatment, but it refers to the Commissioner of Health, which is the Department of Public Health. It says they have jurisdiction to potentially quarantine you. So the
this argument that you're currently making goes to the grounds for the revocation of the license itself, correct?
Yes.
And yes. The temporary injunction was issued based on Iron Waffle's operation without a license.
They didn't have jurisdiction. Go ahead.
So the issue before the district court was whether there was grounds to issue an injunction for operation without a license. And I take it that you don't dispute that Iron Waffle was operating without a license after in mid-December after the license was revoked.
I do dispute it. It's a void order. It's an order with which they have no power to enforce whatsoever. Because I'll go into why I believe that.
Well, Let's get back to the issue before the district court, though. The district court was, the complaint was based on operation without a license. And so that was the focus of the district court proceeding. What legal authority can you cite us to that would give the district court the authority to hear a challenge in that proceeding to the Department of Health's decision, the underlying decision to revoke the license? Because the law is clear that if you want to challenge the revocation of a license, that is to be done by requesting a contested case hearing and then seeking a writ of certiorari to the Court of Appeals. So can you point us to any law, case law, that would give the district court authority to look at the underlying grounds for the revocation as opposed to whether the license had been revoked? And that as the basis for the temporary injunction.
I cited to this court and I cited to the district court two cases, which I can't recall the names of the cases. And I don't even think I need to cite. Do I really need to cite a case that says that subject matter jurisdiction can always be challenged? Are you telling me that I can't raise subject matter jurisdiction in the Supreme Court? I went to the University of Chicago, which is a top 10 law school. And the first thing they taught us was subject matter jurisdiction is always challengeable. That's ridiculous to even argue that. Are you saying as a judge that subject matter jurisdiction is not challengeable at any time in any place? I've never heard a judge say anything so ridiculous. If you want my honest opinion,
Mr. Dahl, the district court clearly has subject matter jurisdiction to determine whether to issue a temporary injunction. I'm not suggesting that the district court doesn't. But the focus of that proceeding was whether Iron Waffle was operating without a license.
And
what you are characterizing as subject matter jurisdiction, I think, is really a challenge to the agency's authority to revoke a license.
Authority and jurisdiction are the same thing. They didn't have the jurisdiction to revoke the license. And let me please state my position, if you will. 12.28, MnSTAT 12.28, says every organization for emergency management established pursuant to this chapter and its officers shall execute and enforce orders and rules as may be made by the governor under the authority of this chapter or section 216C.15. If you go back and you look at 12.04, it says, this is the Division of Emergency Management. It's a creation of it. It says division created, division in the Department of Public Safety to be known as the Division of Emergency Management is hereby created. Under the supervision and control of the state director, the commissioner of public safety may place a director's position in the unclassified service if the position meets the criteria established in section 43A.08, subdivision 1A. Right there, it says it doesn't give the Minnesota Department of Health any jurisdiction to enforce the emergency order. It gives it zero. In fact, you put the two together, it says you have no jurisdiction, no authority. And you're going to tell me that the district court can't consider whether the order of the Department of Health was void. If they can't just start issuing orders, they don't have jurisdiction to do. No court can do that. So then I want to go down the other thing.
Mr. Dahl, I think these arguments are very interesting, but the concern I have is that they should have been raised, you know, in the proper forum. So I'd like to sort of shift the questioning a little bit. So I want to make sure I understand your argument. So are you saying that the service by mail violated due process?
That's a different argument. That's an argument as to personal jurisdiction. The argument as to personal jurisdiction is that if you read 144.19, subdivision 10, the language of 144.99, subdivision 10 says when you're going to revoke a license or suspend it, you have to serve them. And as you know, I cited the Administrative Procedure Act and the Administrative.
Does it say you have to serve them personally, or can you serve them by mail?
It doesn't say specifically in the statute. What I'm saying is, as a matter of statutory interpretation, and as a matter of the fact that you have a due process right to have notice of this, that they have a right to be served at the very minimum by certified mail. And I've cited this.
Again, going to the, you know, not to the TRO now, but to the original notices. Are you saying that service by mail was improper, or are you saying that because there was no personal service, that was improper?
Yes.
And could you cite to me the statute that says personal service was required in the sort of pre-TRO stage dealing with, you know, the initial notices that your client received?
144.99 subdivision 10. It doesn't say personal service is absolutely required.
It doesn't say personal service is required at all, correct?
It doesn't say it that, but the reason that the administrative...
We have personal service, and I certainly agree that's always better, but that's not what is required under the law. So I guess the concern I have is that, let me ask you a different question. Does the record indicate that when there was finally a personal service much later, was that personal service also located at the same address of the restaurant?
I don't know what you mean by the question, personal service much later. The only time that they personally...
Well, when personal service occurred, where did it occur? Did it occur at someone's home, or did it occur at the place of business?
It occurred at their home for the TRO. It wasn't for anything regarding, they'd already been defaulted. The default had already occurred. They never received service previously. That was my objection, was that they had a right to personal service. And when I'm referring to the administrative code, it has, you can serve by, it says by mail, personal service, certified. It provides all the possibilities. And as this court knows, oftentimes in the administrative code, it doesn't say anything. And so the court has to interpret this. And one of the indications that I think that the court should consider with my argument on this point is that the agency usually charged with enforcing the law is entitled to deference. The agency didn't serve you with one case, the one case that said they were entitled to deference. You know why they didn't say that? Is because they weren't entitled to deference. Because the agency that is charged with enforcing this is the Department of Public Safety, the Division of Emergency Management. That's who, they don't get to revoke licenses at will. And then the other issue I had is if you go back to just looking at 144 point section one, it refers to orders in that section. It doesn't refer to executive orders. As I pointed out, that executive orders is a defined term. And we're talking about, it was EO this or EO that. I think EO 20.99 was the one that we're talking about. That's called an executive order. And that's not included in 144.99 subsection one. The reason is because the Minnesota Department of Health isn't given the authority to do what they just did. That's why it's not included in that section. And that's why I'm saying, if you look at this, it dovetails. You look at 14.03, you look at all these other statutes. Then you say, if you look at Chapter 12, the only authority that they have to do anything to someone that violates an emergency order is basically, or criminal sanctions, in 12.45. There's nothing giving to the Minnesota Department of Health. They have no authority. And if I could have deposed somebody from the Division of Emergency Management, they would explain how the statute works. The Department of Health actually knows what's going on here. They know that they're outside of their authority, and outside of their jurisdiction. And the only jurisdiction that were given under the Emergency Management Act was 12.39, which refers you back to that subdivision 144.4192, 144.4195. And those are the statutes on quarantine. The people that passed this act didn't give the state the right to completely upend quarantine law and all the laws that we've been used to. And in fact, is the real reason they go back and they say we're entitled to argue that we're entitled to make this argument that we do, that we have this authority, is 12.21. But if you go to 12.21, which is the powers, duties, etc., they go to subdivision 3 of 12.21, and then subset, or it's section 7, and talks about cooperating with the presidents, the heads of the armed forces, the Emergency Management Agency of the United States, the federal officers, and basically other states. And then it goes down, and this is how the state justifies, or the Department of Health particularly justifies this. It says a conduct of, you can including the direction or control of, subsection 4 under 7, the conduct of persons in the state, including entrance or exit from any stricken or threatened public place, occupancy of facilities, et cetera. If you look at that, the up above is only talking about federal officers and cooperating with other states. It has nothing to do with Minnesota. And then when you go down to subsection 4, the Roman numeral 4, it says threatened public place or any stricken or threatened public place. So the implication, even looking in that section, is in reading the statute, isn't that you can ban business activity across the state of Minnesota. The people that passed the statute, if you took and you got went to this historical, you looked at what the legislative people discussed, and if I had the time to grab all that information and put it in here, it would show that this was not their intention, that they could shut every business down in the state.
I'm not sure if you can currently see the timer on the Zoom view. Hopefully you have the grid view up, but your time has expired. I thank you for your argument, and you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Council, Mr. Dahl, are you able to see the timer? I just want to make sure before we proceed.
You don't need to confirm. Your Honor, I apologize. I didn't mean to go over.
No, that's okay. I just want to make sure that everyone is able to see the timer. And counsel for the department, are you able to see the timer?
I am, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Or the commissioner, I should say. All right. You can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Catherine Voss. I am an assistant attorney general with the state of Minnesota, and I am here today on behalf of the respondent, the Minnesota Department of Health. This case is plain and simply about a restaurant, the Iron Waffle Coffee Company, that, as your Honor mentioned, is operating without a license. The Iron Waffle attempts to switch the focus of the hearing, and really this case in general, to the governor's authority under the Minnesota Emergency Management Act during a peacetime emergency. But the real focus of this case is that the restaurant was operating without a license. The applicable statute is Minnesota Statute Section 157.16 that requires that a restaurant obtain a license on an annual basis from the Minnesota Department of Health in order to serve food and beverages. The Iron Waffle does not have a license and yet was continuing to operate without a license. The department determined that this presented a threat to public health, and so it filed the underlying action requesting both a temporary restraining order and a temporary injunction to enjoin the Iron Waffle from operating without that license. Very simply, the department requested a court order directing the Iron Waffle to comply with the law, just as every other restaurant in the state of Minnesota is required to do. The district court found that The state of Minnesota would be threatened with irreparable harm, which is the prerequisite for a temporary injunction. And it's important to note that that's whether or not the state of Minnesota was experiencing a global pandemic. That certainly presented an increased risk of harm at the point when the Aaron Waffle was operating.
I wanted to go a little back. I just want to make sure I understand the record. So the notice of revocation, does the record indicate that the notice of revocation of license was personally served on Mr. Dahl's client?
The record indicates that the license revocation was eventually personally served on the Iron Waffles operating manager and the former co-licensee, Stacy Strani. And that occurred when the temporary restraining order paperwork was also served in the underlying district court case. And that is the affidavit of service for that is document number 15, showing that that was personally served.
So the TRO and the notice of revocation of license were served at the same time?
Correct.
Okay. Now, so I want to make sure I understand. So when the notice of revocation was served at that time, could the Iron Waffle have contested that before the appropriate agency?
Your Honor, presumably the Iron Waffle could have at that time. And that was also presented to the district court, is that,
does the record indicate how many days from the time you got your notice of revocation, how many days do you have to sort of contest that before the appropriate agency? Is it like 10 days or 20 days or?
It's 20 days under the statute, Your Honor. And I do want to clarify that the department certainly takes the position that personal service is not required. That's not required in the statute. Opposing counsel has not pointed to a statute where that's required. And the case law surrounding due process states that service by mail is sufficient if it gets to the right address, that's the proper place to send mail, which it was in this case. And so the department takes the position that the revocation was actually served back in November by regular and certified mail. However, even if personal service was required, the co-licensee did receive that on December, I think it was 13th, December 18th, December 17th, and they did not request a contested case hearing even after being personally served with the notice.
And was that service?
Go
ahead, Judge Cochran. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you. Just following up on that last point you just made, though, at the point they were personally served, that was more than 20 days from the notice that required a request for a contested case hearing within 20 days. So I guess it's not clear to me that at the point they were personally served that it was still within the time frame to request a contested case.
The department's position is that personal service was not required. So the 20-day deadline should run from the point when they were served by mail. And again,
Understand that, but I just wanted to clarify with you. And I think that that's a good point. But I thought I heard you say that at the point that the owner was personally served, that a contested case could still be requested. And that's what I wanted to clarify.
Sure, Your Honor. And I guess my answer to that is I don't know how that would have played out at the Office of Administrative Hearings. I think that the Iron Waffle could have requested a contested case hearing, but the department's position would be that that's not timely. And I think it would be up to the administrative law judge to decide whether that was a compelling argument.
So I'm sorry, Judge Conley, did you want to follow up with your question?
No, thank you. That that was my question. Thank you very much, Judge Cochran.
Thank you. I have a kind of related question for you. You know, hypothetically, in this case, I think the record reflects that the certified mail went to the address of the business where the business had received other mail, and the business had requested a new license later at that same address. So I don't think there's any confusion about the address in this case for the business. But let's hypothetically think about a case where the department issues an administrative penalty order to a restaurant for failing to comply with food requirements around, you know, proper storage of food and other sanitation type requirements, and then but sends that to the wrong address, and then later issues another letter saying the license was revoked, and that was also sent to the wrong address. So that licensee didn't get notice and didn't have a chance to request a contested case within the statutory time frame. In that case, how does the licensee, and then the department later seeks an injunction because the business is still operating, how does the licensee raise the due process concern about lack of notice? Can it be raised at the temporary injunction phase? Or what is the appropriate legal forum to raise that issue?
Your Honor, I would submit that the proper avenue would, again, be at the Office of Administrative Hearings, and again, due process requires only that the method of notice of the service be reasonably calculated to reach the intended party. So if the department has reason to believe that the address is that the person no longer resides at the address, I know there's case law on that point, then that may raise a due process issue, which is not present in this case. The address that was provided was the address that was provided on the application. And again, because the district court does not have subject matter jurisdiction to review the agency's decision, the district court is not the proper forum to hear those arguments, and would again suggest that the applicant at least request a contested case hearing at OAH. That's an important point in this case as well, is that the Iron Waffle just never requested it. How it would have played out at OAH is up to an administrative law judge, but the Iron Waffle, instead of following the process, is attempting to bring those arguments in the district court. And Judge Guthman issued a very thorough order. It's a little over 18 pages. And while Judge Guthman makes clear that the bulk of the Iron Waffle's arguments are not properly before the district court, he does address those issues and found that service was proper. The department did have authority to revoke the license in the first place. And so this court has the benefit of a very detailed order that addresses all of those issues. But Judge Guthman did find that the important issue in this case is whether the Iron Waffle was operating without a license, whether that presented the risk of irreparable harm to the state of Minnesota. It determined that it did, because the public is never served by an establishment engaging in unlicensed activity. And then it applied the analysis from Wadena. I think it's important that the Iron Waffle does not mention Wadena in its briefs, but the court's analysis can simply end there after determining that Wadena applies. This injunction is authorized by statute. It fulfills the purpose of the statute. So it's a pretty straightforward, simple analysis that can end there. But Judge Guthman did go a step further and analyze this case under the factors in Dahlberg and also determined that those factors weighed in favor of an injunction.
Counsel, is the Dahlberg analysis required because the district court was considering whether to issue a temporary injunction? In your view?
The department's position is...
permanent injunction, sorry.
The department's position is that it was not required because it is statutorily authorized, but it did brief those issues out of an abundance of caution, and firmly believes that all of those factors apply here regardless. Your Honors, then that the Aaron Waffle disregarded the court's order. The court did eventually issue the temporary injunction, and the Aaron Waffle reopened. It does not contest that it was unaware of the order or unable to comply with the order, and so the district court issued contempt order pursuant to its inherent authority. And again, it did not abuse discretion in doing that. And the Aaron Waffle does not address that either. So because the district court did not abuse its discretion in issuing the temporary injunction and the contempt order, we would ask that this court affirm the district court. And unless there are any other questions, I would yield the rest of my time.
Seeing no further questions, we will proceed with any rebuttal. Mr. Dahl? I believe you're on mute, Mr. Dahl.
I want to direct you to my addendum, AA27 at the bottom. It's the November 16th letter of the Department of Health to my client. And it says at the bottom of the letter, you have 20 days after you received this. And if you go back to the pleadings that were filed, the temporary restraining order and all the documents, the state was asserting at that time that it was done, it was over with, that my client could do nothing. And here's what really upsets me and makes me angry about this. What happened was this was raised sua sponte by the district court judge. The state didn't argue all the garbage that she's trying to throw on this court about personal jurisdiction until after all this happened, and we had subsequent motions go back and forth. They didn't, at the time that this went down, they said, hey, this is a default, this is over with, and I have no place to go because I've already been defaulted. I'm way past the 20 days by at least 10 days. Then, under 14.63, I can't go to the appellate court because I don't have a contested case. You guys handle these cases all the time. You know that if I didn't appeal on time, I'm done. So the question is squarely on this court. And I wanted to raise the fact that I've cited in my brief a case that specifically says that you have to do personal service. It's a similar case. It's called Neinzer versus St. Paul School District, 643 Northwest 2nd, 645, which was raised in the district court. That this issue really didn't even come up until after the judge issued his order because the state didn't argue this. You can go back and look at their TRO brief. The other thing I want to cover is when you look at this case, 12.32 says the executive order only applies until it doesn't apply. In other words, it's revoked. And the 20-99 was revoked in January, and the one on mask was revoked on May 18th, 2021. He entered his order, may have even been after those were revoked. So there was no jurisdiction for this. Not only that, if you go to the state's own statute for enforcing this, which they're claiming authority, and I deny that they have authority, 144.99 subdivision one, it says right in there that you can only, it's only as long as the order's enforced. So if you go to, let me look at the exact language. It says says now in force. So it says adopted or issued by the department or under any law now in force. So I've cited numerous cases, including the case involving the revocation of the Cairo license, that says you cannot continue a revocation after the orders are no longer in force. So if the executive orders are revoked, they're no longer in force. That's number one. The second thing is the state's arguing that there was irreparable harm. Where is the irreparable harm in this case? My client stayed closed from when they got the order served on them in December until May after the orders were revoked. The client didn't open during that time whatsoever. And frankly, under the cases I've cited, she should have automatically either had her license back or the state should have granted her a new license. They don't get to have a grudge match hating on my client and refusing to give her a new license, which she's requested, just because they don't like my client and she defied Jan Malcolm and the state of Minnesota. That's not the way the law works, and that's not the way the Kusich case, which I cited about the Cairo, works. And the appellate court was pretty definitive in that case in stating that. Not only that, I cited a case and I attached, I believe, to my brief about the fact that this is applied to driver's license revocation. If the law is revoked, it can't be applied anymore. There is no instance in this case of any COVID cases coming from my client's restaurants, only that she employed two employees with epilepsy who didn't wear a mask.
All right. Thank you to counsel for both parties for your arguments. The matter is now submitted.